Blog Talk Radio.
William said he won't attend my wedding unless I crip walk into my reception.
We might as well hop out the pulpit and let the choir preach it. Your argument would have teeth if you would quit fighting Phoenix. Try to be Finn, we can leave them slayed. Three languages, English, tea, and shade. Wine cellar to the bone gristle. We throw missiles on the warpath to make your soul sizzle. And I attack them with the fat flow. I make it dance like Hillary to get the black vote. I'm a super predator about the heel top, so I ain't paying attention until she does the crip walk. She can study it on Lokestapedia. For now I gotta deal with the social media. Different day but the same turd. Corny motherfuckers wanna drag a nigga like James Byrd. With your clickbait schemes and plans. With niggas like you, who needs the clan?
Something about you was seeming fake.
I speak three languages, English, tea, and shade.
Coming at me with your weak brigade.
I speak three languages, English, tea, and shade.
And I don't care what your people say.
I speak three languages, English, tea, and shade.
So memorize it and repeat the phrase.
I speak three languages, English, tea, and shade.
If you're more of a reader than a listener, you can peep our written content at Social Dissonance. .wordpress.com.
All right, man. Reading in the Shade with Phoenix Kaleeder. Reading in the Shade with Phoenix Kaleeder. All right, Social Justice for Adults, socialdissonance.wordpress.com, Wine Cellar Entertainment, Wine Cellar Podcast, Father Teresa's Wine Cellar News and Comment. Recent blog post by Phoenix Kaleeder called Just Doing Her Job on Social Dissonance. And it is an answer to a question that Feeny Loco, Phoenix Kaleeder, got in her inbox. And it was, what do you think about the Kim Kardashian situation? That was the question Phoenix Kaleeder got in her inbox. And she responded in a public post, because the person also asked, are you going to make it a podcast segment? And Phoenix Kaleeder said, no. Because I don't actually care. Obviously, slut-shaming is bad. Obviously, women are entitled to be sexy postpartum. But I don't find Kim uplifting or inspirational, in my opinion. She didn't post those pictures because she was having a genuine moment of feeling herself. It was a contrived and manipulated cry for attention. She only goes viral when doing something with her body. Because that is the character she has created, and she gets paid millions to do it. When she's been out of the trending tags too long, she wears a see-through skirt when pushing her baby in a stroller. She poses for Playboy. She breaks the internet by modeling her nude ass on a magazine cover. She posts nude bathroom selfies. This photo wasn't a mom feeling good postpartum. This is a business person who has a job description of get the most clicks by being sexy and controversial online. Plus, honestly, she's richer than most of us will be. She has first name recognition. She gets 127 presents for her husband at Christmas. She is all right. I'd rather focus on women and girls who are body-shamed into low self-esteem and eating disorders, not reality star celebrities that show faux outrage after being slut-shamed because they posted a picture that they knew would cause controversy and slut-shaming in the first place. And let's be real, her ploy did not help any of us. Her fans and the press only reinforced the idea we can't shame Kim, but that protection, media attention, and discussion isn't also given to women of color. If a black woman has responded like Kim, she'd just be written off as an angry THOT, that is an acronym for that whore over there, and probably fired because regular folks in straight jobs cannot post nude pictures online without having their lives ruined. Too long, did not read. Kim doesn't need my voice to protect her. I don't like using resources for those above me on the social ladder when other people actually need them. And I'll tell you what, I can dig that. That's what I think about the white feminists who think that they need to protect Hillary Clinton from the Bernie bros. Like, really? Like, I noticed that. Like, the white feminists are always like, I'm going to point out sexism around Hillary Clinton when I see it. She doesn't need you. She doesn't give a blue fuck about your little Facebook post. She's a multimillionaire imperialist. And I noticed that these same white feminists, they're not saying shit about the Jamaican women being terrorized by the prisoners that were let out by Hillary Clinton's decisions as Secretary of State, or the Boko Haram girls who were kidnapped and raped and raped some more, and raped again for good measure, when the Boko Haram guys got guns that were left over by the destabilization of Libya that Hillary Clinton had her hand in. Notice that these white feminists don't give a fuck about protecting them, but a millionaire, multi-millionaire white woman? Oh, she must be protected from the scourge of the Bernie bros. The Bernie bros are coming to get ya. All right, so no. And also this thing going on today, the triggering. What? Okay, any of these triggering guys, look, take it offline. You're not tough guys bugging people on the internet, being an obnoxious internet troll. You're doing nothing. You're not fighting any power or taking down the SJWs. You're doing nothing, all right? When you run up on niggas, run up on me in my motherfucking face and pull your little triggering shit. Until then, fuck all the way the fucking fuck off. All right, let's get into more Reading in the Shade with Phoenix Kaleeder. All right, one.
If you're more of a reader than a listener, you can peep our written content at socialdissonance.wordpress.com.
And it's D-A-S-S-I-O-N. See, y'all be flipping like Tina, turner with the burner, running through your hood yelling lyrical murder. It's dark outside, then these niggas try to hide. I glide through your crew like Clyde the Glide. I ain't letting shit ride. What you wanna do when I come for you and your bitch ass who? Strict nine, lose the mind on the verge of destruction. Blood starts to boil you like a lyrical combustion. Corruption, this ain't no pressure, no pain. Niggas falling off and strain to maintain. I got the clean dream and gunning for the riches. So many whack bitches, posing for pictures every day, same papers. I regulate my papers, hey, cause so many spectators turn to imitate. Hey, walking my walking, mocking my persona. They wanna be like Passion, but they don't want the drama. They be killing me, trying to preach to me, teach to me. I got the PhD in folkology. You got your bachelor's and your master's in the field of dramatic. The lyrical one, bringing the static from the attic. So cock your automatic, I had it up to here. You niggas are in danger, you better stand clear. No hugs, no love, and no kiss. Mainstream America, they just ain't ready for this.
Okay, everyone, it is Phoenix, and I miss you all. Miss the podcast because my health is pretty shit right now, and I'm sad because I missed International Women's Day yesterday, so I did want to record a little something to, talk about, because I'm disappointed that I missed the day, and I always appreciate any possible chance to talk about gender roles and sex work. So, I just wanted to remind people that there is this weird line and distinction between sex workers and feminists, right? So, like, a lot of feminists claim that they support women, but they're very anti-sex work. They pull out really basic tropes and say that, you know, sex workers are exploited and sex work is trafficking and there's no such thing as consenting to sex work under patriarchy. And it really erases agency of sex workers. And it pushes the idea that sex workers are incapable of making their own choices, that sex workers don't understand concepts like consent. And we have this problem, and this problem is this lack of solidarity between sex workers and women. And I know people are like, well, not all sex workers are women, but the overwhelming majority are. And since I'm trying to catch up on Women's Day, we're going to talk about women sex workers for a minute here. We have this weird line between non-sex workers and sex workers when it comes to women as a class, but a lot of us have the same problem, right? And that's why we need to work on that solidarity. The problems that sex workers face and the problems that non-sex workers who are women face are all rooted in misogyny, and we need to figure out how to combat that. And, you know, the myths that surround sex workers are also applied to other women, and it's really weird to see women who shit on sex workers, even though the same problems that other women have for misogyny all come from the same place, you know? So it's like, you're anti-sex workers, but that's a divide-and-conquer technique that is being used rather successfully, I might add, by patriarchy to keep women separated and to keep women unable to work with each other, okay? So, I mean, sex workers deserve dignity. Sex work is work, and stigma kills us. And the problem is that it's not just sex work stigma that kills us, it's misogyny that kills us. The same misogyny that kills other women, too, you know? There's these debates that somehow sex work isn't real work, and that it's different than being a stay-at-home mom, or it's different than being an entrepreneur, it's different than, you know, being a nurse, or a doctor, or an architect, or a cab driver, or a secretary. You know, it's not a real job, but sex work is a real job. You know, it's trying to understand that what sex workers do is a form of work, right? We have to schedule our own appointments. We have to advertise for clients. We have to negotiate our rates. We have to sell our image, sell our presentation in order to attract clients. You know, that's everything else an entrepreneur would have to do when creating a product and selling it. So we do that. And then the actual job itself, selling sexual services, it's not just sex. Oftentimes, sex work involves a lot of emotional labor for clients. And for those who, you know, think like, oh, well, it's just having sex, how hard could it be? Well, we have to offer an experience to the client. And I think that a lot of people don't appreciate that. And that a lot of people don't understand how often it is that sex workers provide emotional labor to clients, right? So emotional labor is basically putting aside your own emotional state and your own self-care to appease or satisfy someone else for the moment. That is a very valid form of labor, and that's something that sex workers do. A lot of us, you know, we have clients that come and talk to us, and we know about their business mergers, or we know about the employee or the co-worker that they hate. We know how their kids are doing. We know what kind of car they're thinking about buying. We know when their mother's birthday is. We know what their favorite colors are. We know a lot of personal information about clients because they come and talk to us about these things. That is the emotional labor that we provide. But the thing is, if we're going to say that sex work isn't real work because emotional labor isn't real work, then where does that leave wives and girlfriends? Where does that leave women in the workplace who are expected to cater to their boss's feelings, right? Because we live in a world where emotional labor is part of work. It's part of every occupation, right? So when you think about if you go out to eat and the waitress forgets to give you a refill and she apologizes and she's so sorry. She's not actually really fucking sorry, right? She just wants a tip, but she has to cater to your emotions to get that tip. When we are dealing with people in any sort of service industry, you know, retail customers who apologize because you know, you're having a problem with your cable service. It's not that they necessarily are invested in you as a person or as an individual, but their job relies on trying to convince the customer that they are emotionally invested. You know, we get angry when doctors have a bedside manner that's really shitty. We expect when you go to a bank that the bank teller is going to ask you how your day is, say, how are you doing today? You know, we expect that shit. And we are conditioned to think that we deserve emotional labor, especially from women, and that women are supposed to do it for free, okay? We have this issue in our society, right? So centuries of social conditioning have sort of masked the way we behave, right? And now it's common knowledge to say that women are supposed to provide emotional labor for free. You know, like, honestly, from the time we're born, we expect women to provide emotional labor to us. We have these this really strict gender binary and this really, really ingrained sense of gender roles. You know, like, it's our mothers, not our fathers, that hold us when we cry as infants. It's our mothers who are supposed to stay home with us when we're sick while the father goes to work. And, you know, the things that a father is supposed to do are very emotionally hands-off, right? Like, your dad's supposed to teach you how to throw a ball or how to ride a bike or, you know, you build a fucking treehouse with you. But when you're upset and you cry, it's supposed to be your mother that wipes away your tears. It's supposed to be your grandma who knits you new sweaters every year and spoils you and, like, sneaks you chocolate when your parents aren't looking to make you feel better. As you get older, it's your girlfriend who does a bunch of the housework in your first apartment. You know, you could both have jobs outside of the home, but yet somehow it's usually the girlfriend who's supposed to do the dishes and the laundry. When you get married, it's your wife who's supposed to show up and schmooze at company functions so that you can get the promotion or you can stay on good terms with your boss. We've decided that that's just part of what women do. Women provide that labor. You know, when you're elderly, you might have an adult son who helps, you know, like you live with him or helps pay for your housing, but it's still expected to be your daughter that looks after your other needs, like, you know, making sure that you're taking your medicine and you're eating properly and you're making it to your doctor's appointments, because women are expected to be these natural caregivers. And we assume women are naturally wired to do that, but we never ask if women want to do that, okay? The standard assumption is we have, like, you know, patriarchal religions, right? God made women to be caretakers, or we have this, like, evo-psych natural evolution bullshit, right? All women evolved to be natural caregivers. That's their natural state. And because we assume it's natural, we never stop and ask women if they want to be paid for their emotional labor, if they want to give us emotional labor. You know, we have a situation and we expect a woman to come fix it and make everybody feel good and cater to everyone's emotions, and we don't ask how women want to do this or if women want to do this. And I think that that causes a huge rift when it comes to sex workers and non-sex workers, because a lot of women can talk about experiences in the workplace, right, in corporate America, of like, you know, my boss was having a bad day, so I had to, you know, go grab him an extra latte to make him feel better, or, you know, so-and-so dropped the ball on this promotion, but I couldn't, like a coworker dropped the ball on a presentation, but I couldn't outshine them because I'm just a woman. So I had to make it look like, even though I saved his ass, it was a collaborative team effort. We have stay-at-home moms who say that, you know, even though I'm not working outside the home, I still do the laundry, I keep the house clean, I cook, I take care of the kids. That is a lot of time-intensive work, and I cater to my husband's emotional needs and ask him how his day was and listen to him talk about what goes on in the workplace, but I don't expect him to reciprocate and ask me how I was dealing with, you know, a sick toddler for 12 hours. And it's fascinating and disappointing that women are beginning to talk about emotional labor and all these other aspects, but still ignore emotional labor that sex workers provide to clients. right? Because when society devalues sex work, saying it's not real work, it's for the same reason that women don't get promotions in corporate workplaces. It's for the same reason that single moms aren't, quote-unquote, working a real job. It's because we undervalue labor that women do. And it's really disappointing to see that even women will fight amongst themselves, right? We have women who work straight jobs who think that they're better than sex workers and stay-at-home moms. We have stay-at-home moms who think that they're above sex workers because everybody thinks their labor has value, even though sex workers don't have value, which is, like, fucking ridiculous because we're all doing similar work when it comes to the emotional labor component of the job. You know, we need to, like, get over these fucking gender binaries. We need to stop with this, like, intra-level caste system where we're judging each other based on what we do. There's nothing more dignified about a wife doing emotional labor for her husband than there is for a sex worker doing emotional labor for a client. Both should be respected, and above all, most importantly, both should be paid, right? Emotional labor is real work, and I think that, you know, when we talk about gender roles, emotional labor is probably one of the biggest things when it comes to why women are often overlooked. It's assumed that because women provide the emotional labor, we're too nice, we're too kind, we're too sweet, we can't handle real-world things like being a CEO or being a vice president. We assume that women are wired to do it, and this is a natural state, so we have to do emotional labor, or that it's weird for men to do emotional labor. But, you know, women might not want to do it, and that's okay. Women might want emotional labor because they're comfortable with it, but it still needs to be respected and validated as real work, regardless of the woman, regardless of the job, you know? So let's, you know, kind of get over this whole idea that it's only valid if it's, you know, a wife doing it to a husband. It's valid if it's an employee doing it for a coworker. It's valid if it's a sex worker doing it for a client. But we also need to understand that it's okay for women to have boundaries and say no to providing emotional labor because it's exhausting. And a lot of women end up being so focused on other people that we don't focus on ourselves. We're worried about, like, well, is this person feeling okay? Is that person feeling okay? Is everybody happy? Without focusing on what makes us happy, right? So it's also okay to make boundaries and say, I've given enough emotional labor today, I'm done. It's okay to say, this person doesn't respect the emotional labor I give them, so I'm going to stop doing it for my own self-preservation, you know. And so I just think that's something that we need to think about. I'm a little bit sad that I couldn't do this as a live segment on the show, but, you know, health is a thing. But, you know, I hope some people can listen to this and just, you know, think about some things. You know, like, seriously, what is the difference between emotional labor of a sex worker listening to a client talk about, you know, their horrible, strained relationship with their family versus a wife listening to her husband talk about an emotional estrangement from family? What is the difference between, you know, a person at a straight job who's trying to make sure everybody in the workplace is content and happy versus sex workers trying to make sure clients aren't happy? And I know that the ultimate end goal of the job is different, right? It's about sexual services versus, you know, a marriage versus a straight job. But the emotional labor component, it's the same. And that's because of that patriarchal gender role bullshit where we say, no, that's what women are made for. That's what women do. That's what women like to do. Women can't do anything outside that. Like, let's fucking expand. And when we expand, especially in social justice and feminist circles, when we expand, please remember to include sex workers in that struggle, because what sex workers do is valid too. We're judged not only for stigma as sex workers, but stigma as women. And this is one of those places where we need to really work on that solidarity, right? Solidarity is a verb, it's an action, right? Behavior, it's a mindset. So, you know, let's work on that solidarity, because everyone deserves it. All women deserve to have their labor be appreciated. So, you know, just something to think about. And happy belated International Working Women's Day. And thanks for hanging out in the wine cellar. Be sure to check out Reading in the Shade on Facebook if you haven't yet. Also, be sure to click that fantastic PayPal or Patreon link and bless us with some cash so we can keep doing this because, you know, again, unpaid labor is kind of shitty. And there's a lot of labor that goes into making content. It's very time-consuming. It's worth it, I think. You know, we do this for people because we think some things need to be talked about, but, you know, a certain amount of monetary funding is greatly, greatly appreciated. So, thanks for hanging out in the wine cellar, and I will catch you on a live show as soon as I am able. Thanks, y'all.
All right. Father Teresa's Wine Cellar. Father Teresa, the greatest black atheist. Feeny Loco, the uppity negress. Reading in the Shade, social justice for adults. As you can tell, she's not particularly well. You can probably hear it in her voice and delivery and vocal projection there. Not doing well. The histoplasmosis is acting up. That is what's going on right now with Phoenix Kaliter. All right, and a little bit more of Reading in the Shade with Phoenix Kaliter. This is coming off of socialdissonance.wordpress.com. And this one is called Unfriendly Friending by Phoenix Kaliter. She wrote, "Stop unfriending your bigot friends online," Phoenix Kaliter continues, saying, "'Cause when you're white and unfriend your racist uncle, guess who still has to deal with him? Every black person on the comment threads on Black Lives Matter posts. When you block your homophobic former college roommate, guess who he has more time to harass? Right, people trying to plan pro-LGBTQIA events. When you're cis and you unfriend your random Facebook buddy because they misgendered Caitlyn, you're just giving them more time to harass the trans community. Don't block your sexist coworker on Twitter when you know he's just gonna troll random women online. Stop abandoning conversations because they tire you or stress you. They make us tired too, but we are relying on your show of solidarity to help us out. Remember, solidarity is an action, and collect your fucking people." And that's Phoenix Kaliter reading in the shade, but that one was posted to socialdissonance.wordpress.com, where we be doing stuff, right. All right, so with that, the Reading in the Shade has been hit up, and if folks still want to tune in, we're going past Reading in the Shade now, and we're going to go ahead and dig into some of the regular news and comment wine cellar. Can you dig it? And we'll actually we'll go ahead and kick that off with Jim Martha Fracken Hightower.
Our Congress critters can't even do right without turning it into a wrong. They've been rewriting the 1976 Toxic Substances Control Act, which has been so riddled with loopholes that the law itself is toxic to nature and human health. The good news is that Congress's rewrite is said to be a big step forward in protecting us and the earth from the witch's brew of poisonous chemicals that industry spews everywhere. But look out! Tucked deep inside the 46-page proposal is a single paragraph known as the Mysterious Monsanto Clause. Actually, the purpose of the paragraph is not at all mysterious. It shields the maker of highly toxic PCB chemicals from liability for the enormous environmental and health damages they're causing. Also, the beneficiary of this exemption from lawsuits is no mystery. While Monsanto is not mentioned by name, it produced almost all of the PCBs that now contaminate our water, soils, and bodies. The mystery is this. Who slipped this gift for one corporate giant into the proposed law, with no public hearing, no debate, and no vote? Monsanto insists, with a straight face, that it never asked to be spared from having to shoulder any legal responsibility for recklessly profiteering on PCBs for decades. Congressional insiders confide that House Republican staff members inserted the paragraph, but at the behest of which Congress critter? That's a secret. Not one of them has had the guts or moral character to own up to this grand theft of taxpayer money, putting America's workaday families on the hook for hundreds of millions of dollars to clean up Monsanto's massive mess. This is Jim Hightower saying, the real mystery is that these thieving congressional Republicans can't figure out why most Americans consider them to be contemptible corporate whores.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
All right. And just taking a look here, Feeny Loco, if you are tuned in, let me know if you want me to quote what you're saying here in the messenger on the program. Feeny Loco is not on the microphone, but she's here in the messenger, so just monitoring what she's doing. She's in pretty bad health right now with the histoplasmosis. Now, right now, moving into it, this is up at the FatherTeresaBlog.wordpress.com, though you can Google it, find it any goddamn where, but hey, fucking click on our shit. All right, so lead in Newark and New York public schools. All right, so the schools have been ordered to use alternate water supplies due to elevated lead levels. The Department of Environmental Protection said it found elevated lead levels in various taps in recent tests. The CBS2's Meg Baker reported officials first realized there was an issue at Louise A. Spencer Elementary School last Thursday when there were reports of discolored water. Discolored water? I just want to know if there are discolored children down there at the school. Right? Right. Okay, well, Feeny Loco sent me. Okay, I get what you're doing there. It's a... might be a link to some audio of some McPublicans talking the kind of stuff they talk. Now, back to this story. A quote from the community advocate, Donner Jackson. She said, how would Donner Jackson talk? She was like, hey, how long ago was the report done, fuckface? Yeah, maybe that's how she talks, right? How long ago was the report done? How long did Newark Public Schools sit on this information? End quote. Now, Christopher Cerf, superintendent of public schools, told CB2 he was first briefed on the issue Monday. However, parents were not notified until Wednesday afternoon. Get a little more lead in them, buddy. Just a little bit more. A quote from Cerf, he said, well, we need to put a place in it, but by the way, we received assurance that this was not a high-level emergency nature that day. All right, end quote. The parents were alarmed by the delay. A quote from Sabrina Oliver said, I was not aware. I didn't know until you told me, fuckface. The children do need water to stay hydrated during the day. And that's very alarming as a parent. And then not knowing that that's even more alarming. End quote. The Newark Public School Systems is supplying the schools with alternate water for drinking and for food preparation. All right, so that's going on up in New York and Newark. And we're actually going to go ahead and tie it off here. Man, we're going to go ahead and bring the wine cellar back tomorrow. And what we're doing, we are shortening up the programs because this was Reading in the Shade. And I'll probably just straight upload some wine cellar and it won't be as much live. Because what I did, we're diverting funds. Like, the funding that was going to pay to have space to broadcast a live 2 hours, we're going to take that funding and just go straight to building a website. Because March, April, May, we want to have a website up and live by May 1st, right? And we want our own .com. And the thing is, it's like, okay, do we want to keep scratching at getting members, scratching at getting PayPal donations, or just reallocate the funding? So the funding is going to be reallocated from the Blog Talk Radio paying for the two-hour space, going to making a website. And this is one thing, and that will drop the shows down to around the time that we're ending here, you know, 30 to 45-minute programs. And then, but this is what's super cool, is that that can go to an actual website. And then once the website's paid for, that's a year payment, right? You pay for the whole year in one shot. So after paying for the 1 year, let 2 months go by, let funding build back up, and then go back to doing two-hour programs again. But for now, we have to make the sacrifice so that we can get the gain. Can you dig it? I thought you fucking could. All right, thanks for checking out Reading in the Shade with Phoenix Kaleeder, and this one was titled Emotional Labor.